The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 514. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, my guest for this episode is a gentleman that I met in December while I was at GalaxyCon Columbus. And his name is Nick McPherson, and he is an author, and he has penned a wonderful book called Chosen the New Order and another book called Fractured Sky, both of which are part of his larger project called the Grim King Saga. Now, you're going to hear Nick and I talk about the origins of the project, and he makes no bones about it. Nick is an avid fan of Lord of the Rings, and it's an inspiration for him. So we talk about that. We talk about the structure of how he set up the story. We talk about how his family, his children are an inspiration to him as well. And a whole host of other things that I just can't wait to get on into the episode so you can hear about this great project, again, called the Grim King Saga. So let me go ahead and pay some bills real quick first before you hear Nick and I chat about his wonderful project. First, gotta thank a great sponsor of the PVD Cast and the newest sponsor, might I add, Courtney 614 Online Sales. If you need great deals on women's fashions and health and beauty and other things, look no further than Courtney 614. You can find her at all those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc. Simply look for Courtney 614, spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, 614, or on some of those sites, it's Courtney, same spelling, underscore 614, and you can get yourself some fabulous deals. And if anybody does purchase something from Courtney 614 Online Sales, please let her know that you know all about her endeavors, thanks to yours truly, right here on the PVD Cast. And now it's time for the old school sponsor of World's Greatest Comics. World's Greatest Comics has everything you need for your comic book fandom. They've got tons of comics from the golden, silver, bronze, and modern era. They have graphic novels. They have collections. They have hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got toys, collectibles, you name it. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. So if you are in Ohio, you owe it to yourself to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. If you can't get to Ohio, you can still check out the store. Go over to wgcomics.com, which is their web address, and you can check them out on their very interactive Facebook account. Just look for at WG Comics. I would also like to thank these fine businesses for giving their support to me. It means a lot, and I truly, truly appreciate it. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear myself chatting with Nick McPherson. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am sitting down with Nick McPherson, a gentleman that's got a very unique project called the Grim King Saga. We'll talk all about it, but before we do that, Nick, let everybody know how you're doing.
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, John.
You're quite welcome. And at the recording of this episode, we have a massive amount of snow out there. And you said you said off air that being in the Cleveland area, you kind of got buried.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a good foot and a half It's kind of been sprinkling today. I think the lake effect is just dusting on top of our mountains right now. So yeah, so we're digging out right now.
Same here in Columbus. So and heck, almost half the country. Almost, you know, I can't think of any place other than maybe the Pacific Northwest that's not in California. They're probably not getting right. any of this weather, but everyone else, yeah. man, you know.
Yeah, I remember looking at the radar and it was like Texas up to like North Carolina was just a giant blue bar. It's like wild.
Yeah.
Totally wild.
Yeah, I watched that AFC Championship game and it was wild because first half yeah. it was fine, and then by third quarter, it's like it's starting to snow, and then by fourth quarter, you couldn't see anything.
It was like a blizzard. It was nuts.
Yeah, yeah. All right, but enough about the snow. People don't want to hear about the snow. So, you know, let's talk about you and your project, which, of course, is called the Grim King Saga. Can you give a quick little summary for the listeners at home?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Lord of the Rings type young adult fantasy adventure akin to... Again, Lord of the Rings, Percy Jackson, Harry Potter, those kind of stories. But it's about three boys who are teleported from Earth to this alternate realm of Endland, where they are dubbed the saviors. And they're kind of like, what the heck is everyone talking about? We're just a couple of kids from Cleveland. So they kind of have to step into these new roles that everyone in this, you know, medieval knights and wizards and kings environment is expecting them to be. So they have to, it's a bit of a fish out of water story, and then kind of the hero's journey for these three young boys.
You said that obviously the three boys from Cleveland. Is Cleveland show up a lot? Are there a lot of landmarks in the tale, or did you kind of steer clear of that?
I steered clear of that. So the beginning of book one is kind of them being pursued by these kind of two factions, a light and dark faction. They're trying to figure out who's who, what's going on. So most of the story is in the realm of Endland. But one of the characters, one of the boys, Johnny, he's like a quote machine. He's seen every movie ever made. So he makes all sorts of goofy references to all sorts of kind of pop culture things, and nobody in this alternate realm knows what he's talking about. So him and his buddies thinks it's funny, but nobody else. So I kind of touch back to like the real world in that aspect, but nothing too specific to Cleveland.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned the first book, which is actually called Chosen, the New Order. Mm-hmm. So that's book one. Would that be the book that sets forth all the exposition and the rising action?
Yes. Yes. Book one is very much, again, if you've read Lord of the Rings, kind of the Fellowship. There's a lot, you know, they're in Hobbiton for like 200 pages of that book. Like, so it's not quite that drawn out. But book one is largely kind of introducing the characters, getting used to this new fantasy realm, and kind of setting the table for, you know, there's a little bit of kingdom politics. There's some monsters that are all after these boys for their abilities. There's obviously the Grim King, who's the big bad throughout the series. So book one's largely kind of a setup. They get a taste for battle, and then book two continues right on the heels of book one. And that's where the stakes start up in. The boys have to really try and step into this hero role, even though they still don't quite know what the heck they're doing. But they're trying to be these heroes that everyone is expecting them to be. So book one's kind of the rising action, the setup, the introduction, and then book two continues into the little more action-packed adventure.
And book two is called Fractured Sky?
Fractured Sky, that's correct.
Where'd you come up with that name for? Or is it something within the actual book that is, you don't want to give away?
It is tied to part of the book. And for the longest time, the book was untitled. And I wrote this particular scene involving a fractured sky. And that name just stuck And I was like, man, that's okay. Catchy. I like that. And so it is tied to the story. I don't want to give away too much. But yeah, it's a kind of a crucial point in book two.
Okay. So let's tackle a question that I like to ask all of my writers that come on the show. What is your process for writing the books? I assume there's some type of rough draft type of scenario that you go through or whatnot. Can you take us through the experience of plotting everything out?
Yeah, of course. I think I am probably a little less structured than most. Well, than some writers. I know everybody's a little different. Mm-hmm. I have kind of key points in my story that I want to get to. Either it's an interaction or an action scene or, you know, a big reveal or whatever it is. So when I set out to write, I kind of have maybe 4, 5, 6 of these kind of big major milestones I want to hit. But a lot of the in between, it's very much discovery writing. I kind of just start writing, and sometimes the direction is kind of direct to the next milestone, and sometimes I kind of sway off and hit some side plots, and so I'm very, very unstructured in my style. I find a way to get to these points, you know. If I want this interaction to happen in a city that's the next continent over, I kind of think, okay, well, why would they be going to this continent? And then I kind of backtrack and say, okay, well, there's this type of, you know, monster, or there's this type of, they get a note, or they, you know, and I kind of backfill it and then fill in the details to get from those major plot points, or between those major plot points, if that makes sense. So again, it's pretty loose. I know some people are very rigid. They have an outline. They have like every scene, you know, to the T lined out. I can't operate that way. My brain likes the freedom to kind of just write. So that's kind of my process. I lay out the major points and then kind of let my imagination wander between them. And then, you know, the hardest part for me is getting it down, getting the first draft down. And then after that, I can go back and weed out, you know, hey, I went way off course, you know, between these two plot points. let me trim some of this off and get back on track. But yeah, that first draft can be kind of lengthy because I let my imagination wander a bit.
And that's okay, because, you know, as you mentioned, I've talked to many, many writers who I've heard, you know, outlines and then, you know, free flow like you kind of do. I've heard there's a one comic book creator who essentially post-it notes everything out on like a whiteboard, you know. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, I think whatever is, you know, comfortable for you is the way you have to go.
Right. Cuz I tried initially to really outline it. And actually my first draft of Chosen was going to be much more like in the realm of like angels and demons and like, mm-hmm. good versus evil in that sense. But I didn't like that everything was kind of predefined. So I went back and again, like my brain, if there's too many rules, my brain's like, nope, can't do it. Like I need the space to kind of feel where the story kind of takes me. Yeah, like I said, I know people are some people are very rigid, and that's just not me.
Did you work with an editor?
Yeah, I did. my uncle, he used to work in textbook publishing. He was an artist. Oh, okay. So he was able to connect me with one of his editors from when he was still in the workforce. Super nice lady. She helped me. Foolish me, first draft, I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. She's only going to have a couple minor things. And I get my draft back and it's just red, just covered in red. But she was very helpful. obviously found a lot of things that needed adjusting and fixing. So yes, definitely. I definitely worked with an editor, and for anyone who is considering writing or is currently writing their first book, get an editor. I thought, like I said, I thought I was good. There's a lot out there that a second pair of eyes will catch that you won't. So definitely get an editor.
Can we talk a little bit about your publisher? Who published the book?
So they're actually self-published. Okay. There's a company in Akron, Ohio called 48 Hour Books. And they are fantastic. They are, one, they're local to me, which is super convenient, but two, they're extremely helpful in the formatting process. If you call, you talk to a person every time, you can go there and like see the books. They'll have like a preprint copy for you. So I worked very closely with them to kind of bring it to fruition. And for like these special editions, I know a lot of people really like, I've heard people won't even read the books. They just like the pretty covers and the gold foil and like the painted edges. And so I guess there are like book collectors who don't really read. They just like the like aesthetics of it, which blows my mind. But 48 Hour Books helped me with set up that for my special edition for Fractured Sky. So not published through like a big company, but the company I worked with was super helpful, very professional. And the books turned out great. I don't know if you saw them at the Columbus convention. They're pretty books.
Well, that's why I was curious how you got them published, because they are very sharp. Mm-hmm. And so I was curious about that because there are challenges to working with small mom and pop, publishers as opposed to larger, and vice versa. There's always that yin and yang, if you will, to anything in life.
For sure. And I initially had started trying to go down the query path. I'll get an agent and I'll start querying out to these big names. And I just heard a lot of horror stories about people who had their book finished and were sitting for a year or 2 years or 3 years to try and find somebody who's willing to publish it. So I tried it for like a month and I was like, you know what? I can figure this out and get it out there. The book's done. I want people to read and enjoy this. I don't want to sit it on the shelf for, who knows how many months or years before someone's willing to say, oh yeah, this looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately, like you said, you want people to read it, and if they have to search for it, some people just won't bother.
Right. Right.
And I also think the technology makes it so that maybe you don't need to have a big giant company behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the way social media is, the way, anyone can go on Amazon and get a microphone and a decent microphone for $30, you can kind of build your own brand, apart from these big publishing companies. So I think the indie space, the self-publishing space, it gets kind of a bad rap because I think people perceive it as maybe unprofessional or like second tier compared to the big publishing houses. And to be fair, there are some books you read out there when you're like, goodness gracious, but there are a lot of really good authors who kind of like me just didn't want to deal with the red tape of a big publisher and going through all that agent and querying and that whole charade. So there are a lot of really good indie authors out there, and I think that space is going to kind of keep growing and keep eating into the big publishers market. At least that's my hope, and from the success I've seen other indie authors have, it seems to be the general trend.
Well, I do like what you said a few moments ago about that there are book collectors who just don't even read the books. They just have them to collect. I'm going to start using that as my excuse for my read pile for comics. That's
yeah. I'm just a collector.
You know, I mean,
you and me both, man. You and me both.
Have you ever pulled a book out and you're like, oh, I bought this just a couple years ago, like 2019. And then you look and you're like, oh no, this is from 2005. Oh God. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a bunch from pre-COVID era. I guess right when COVID launched, I bought like four or five fantasy books. I'm like, I'm going to knock these out. You know, we're going to be in lockdown. And they're still sitting there. Like, I'm going to get to them eventually, I swear. But
yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm not the only one that has that problem. That made me come, because for years I was like, man, I'm embarrassed. I have all these comics and, you know, and I haven't read them, but I want to read them because they're excellent books, you know, and it just, I don't know, time, you know, but. You know, since we're talking about comics, let's not deviate from that. What are some of the things that you enjoy to read in the world of comic books?
So, I have gotten into, well, I have two boys who are just kind of entering the reading age. So they like Dog Man. So we've been reading Dog Man. But this year we got them some Ninja Turtle comics that they've really liked, because the one was Michelangelo for Halloween, so he carries his nunchuck around still, you know, fighting invisible bad guys. So back in the day, I really liked Spider-Man. I was a religious Spider-Man Saturday morning cartoon watcher. But more recently, it's been The Adventures of Dog Man, and just recently getting into some Ninja Turtle stuff that my boys really, really like.
You know what? That's awesome that you can bring that joy and that love to your sons, and they can in return thoroughly enjoy your selections of Ninja Turtles and Dog Man. So that's awesome, man. That it kind of has, you have that unique. Not unique. I that's not the right adjective, but you have that connection with your sons.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really like whatever they like, I'm going to support them in, but it's very cool when they have similar likes to you and you can be like, oh, you should look at this. Oh, you should look at that. And they're like, oh, cool. You know, like, and they're like in, you know, instantly they're in. So it is really cool. It's really, really a fun process. Kids are fun in general, but it's especially fun when they're kind of aligned with your interests too.
Were they part of an inspiration for writing the Grim King saga?
A little bit. I always, when I read The Hobbit as a kid, it kind of just blew my mind that you could just make up a universe and characters and a whole history, and like that really blew my mind as a kid. And I think when I started writing, I wanted to do something like that for somebody out there. You know, if one kid picks up the book and is just blown away, like I've accomplished all I need to accomplish as a writer. And with my kids, you know, we read almost every night to them, unless they're, you know, dilly-dallying on getting their teeth brushed and they miss out on their book time privileges. But we read almost every night, and it's fun to read something that you've written, because like they run up like, oh, this is dad's book. So that's a cool feeling to share with them and to be able. I know in the future when they're able to actually read it themselves, that I think that'll be a cool experience for them to be like, oh, this is dad worked on this. This is a cool thing. So it wasn't explicitly for them, but kind of in retrospect now, like, yeah, it'll be a cool experience when they get to hold these books and have this series and go, oh yeah, my dad wrote that. Like I think that'll be cool for them.
You know, you talked about that the inspirations for you was The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. I have to ask, what's your thought about the movies?
I really like the trilogy. I can't do The Hobbit. The Hobbit movies for me, I mean, they're entertaining, but I don't know. I feel like they stretched it out too much. Mm-hmm. I think they could have made like one, like 3 hour, 3.5 hour, like extended cut Hobbit movie, and it would have been better than splitting it into its own trilogy. I don't know. I really love the Fellowship movies, Fellowship, Two Towers, Return of the King. Those I watch those almost once a year. I'll watch the extended version just because I love them so much. but the Hobbit ones, I can't quite deal with. I'm not even really sure what exactly bothers me about them. Maybe it's just the length, but yeah, I can't get on board the Hobbit movie train.
See, I'm going to be honest. I've never watched the Hobbit ones. Not for any reason other than I just was like, they're three. And I'm like, I've watched the Lord of the Rings. I like them very much. I can't just do another three, you know, sequel like that. Like you just, just like, I can't, like I just finished it. And so I never got into it. But from what I've heard, what you said is what most of the complaints I've heard is that there's so much padding that it could have been just 1 3.5 or 4 hour film and be done with it. But So when did you become interested in writing, if I may ask?
So as a kid, I did a lot of comic book sketches. I'd make my own comic books on my notebook paper. I did a lot of Godzilla. I was big into Godzilla back in the day. So I would go to my grandparents' house and I would just draw Godzilla fight scenes, you know, as like a 7, 8, 9 year old. And I remember writing kind of goofy little stories as a kid. Just like one pagers, just there's a spider and he got smashed by my shoe, you know, like little things like that. And I draw like a spider. And, but what really got me going for the Grim King saga was actually, a lot of free time and a lot of boredom. So my wife was in grad school. She was in class on the weekends, in Pittsburgh. So I would drive out to Pittsburgh on Friday after work. I'd say hi to her. She'd have to go to sleep because she'd have to get up early for class all day. And for a while, I was just playing video games. I was super big into Halo. I think Halo 3 and Halo Reach were out at that time. If you're a gamer, it was like my bread and butter. I was pretty good at those games. Probably spent way too much time playing a silly shooter game. But eventually I got bored with that, which I didn't think was possible. And somewhere in that, either while I was playing or if you've ever driven the turnpike between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, it's a very boring, straight, nothing to look at farmland kind of trip. So my mind was wandering. And eventually I said, you know, I could make a cool universe like they do in Halo. I could make a cool universe like they do in all these comics and these stories and these games that I play. And so I started just writing down kind of snippets of ideas that would come to me on the 2 hour drive to Pittsburgh. And eventually I had enough, I guess, ammunition where I was like, oh, I could kind of weave these ideas together into this different story. And so I guess it kind of grew from there, but I didn't initially set out and be like, today am going to start writing a book. It was just, it was like a kind of an organic, like I said, the growth out of boredom and free time led to it. Okay. That was definitely pre-kids. That was definitely pre-kids.
Well, hey, I think that's a good use of your time. You know, if you're if you got that time in the car, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I to be honest with you, a lot of my great ideas I have, I make no. Everyone makes fun, but when I mow the yard, I'm the most creative when I mow the yard.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about. I was funny enough. I was talking to my uncle about it. Cause he's not a writer, but he's a super smart guy. He just makes like little gadgets and cool little things that he thinks of. And he was saying kind of similar when he's hiking, you know, just going, he'll do like a 1 or 2 mile hike. Like the ideas are just flowing. So there's something about like it's like the space where your mind can just wander. Right. I'm hiking. I have nothing else to think about except I'm going to hike from this point to that point. You know, I got to cut the grass. I have to cut all the grass. So I just have to finish. Like, so something about that, that activity or being in that state of mind, like your brain, like releases the floodgates.
Yeah.
Cause again, like the turnpike, you know, I have to drive 2 hours. Okay. I can only listen to so much music, you know, when I'm driving there every weekend. So, yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon where it just like kicks in and all of a sudden your imagination is just spitting out all sorts of crazy ideas.
Well, I wanted to ask real quick, on your website, you have a collection of short stories. And I was just wondering, where do they fall into your timeline? Are they connected to the Grim King saga or are they kind of standalone stories?
They are all standalone except for one. It's called The Prophet of Palanthi. That is a kind of a very early prequel to one of the characters. So in the Grim King saga, there's a character named Walding, who is this super old, mostly senile hermit who's trying to show the boys how to use their new powers, but sometimes doesn't know his name or where he is. So he's kind of a humorous, you know, Gandalf type figure, but more senile. So the Prophet of Palanthi is a prequel for when he was a boy, kind of being recruited into this chosen order, for his abilities that he was showing. So that one is connected. The other ones are separate. They're just stream of consciousness. I would get up super early for those stories and write for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. They're mostly unedited. I kind of went back through and did a cursory check to make sure I wasn't missing any words or anything super glaring. But they're kind of just stream of consciousness. I think 3 or 4 sci-fi. I have another 1 or 2 that are fantasy based, but they're kind of all over the place, fun little stories that I just, again, they, like in the morning your brain can't really think about anything else because nothing has happened yet. I found, so if I get up super early, my brain's kind of half asleep and I start writing, it's just the imagination's kind of going straight from brain to the computer. So that's how those stories kind of progress, was just a random idea and I just ran with it.
Did they occur to you like in the timeline of events? Were you already working on Chosen or Fractured Sky while those were popping off in your head, so to speak?
Yeah. I used them as kind of like if I'm at a roadblock with the main stories that I'm trying to write. You know, for whatever reason, the imagination isn't kicking in for those stories. The short stories kind of, I think that's why most of them are sci-fi, because I can kind of remove myself from the fantasy world and a different part of my brain can be creative in a sci-fi environment. So I kind of use them as like a Kickstarter almost to get my imagination back on track, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
How's the feedback been for the Grim King saga?
It's been good. The hardest part And this is one of the, you know, that we talked about kind of pros and cons of the big publishing industry. One of the cons of being self-published and being an indie author is it's up to you to market. And if you're like me and you don't quite know exactly how to market, that can make it hard to get into readers' hands. So that's what I found has been the hardest part, is just getting people to like, oh, you wrote a, like, I've seen friends who I've, I'm good friends with, and you see them, you know, every couple months, and they're like, oh yeah, I saw something. Did you write a book or something? I'm like, yeah, man. Like Chosen came out like 5 years ago. What you know, where have you been? Like, yeah. So I found that's been the hardest part, is getting people to know that the book exists at all. And then for them to look at it and be like, oh, this looks interesting, or this doesn't look interesting. Which is part of the reason I've started to do, last year I did a lot of comic conventions, which has been so much nicer to online, you know, through social media and emails and all that stuff. You have, everyone's attention span is so short. You have like 4 seconds for them to be, for a prospective buyer to be engaged and like dig in more to what you have to say. And if they're not in within like the first 3 or 4 seconds, they're out, they're on to the next, you know, they're scrolling, right? Mm-hmm. And at a comic convention, it's so nice to be able to talk to somebody face to face and really get to explain what your book's about, why they might like it, what comparable stories is it like, you know, what audiences would enjoy it, you know, all those things that an ad, you try to convey in an ad or in a post, but you can't do it the same as a face-to-face interaction. So the receipt of it has been good for the people I've gotten to pick it up and read it. But that, like I said, that's been the hardest part. But the comic conventions have been a huge boost in being able to talk to people and actually get it in a reader's hands.
You actually answered my next question, which was that we met at GalaxyCon in December. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you how the experience was of being involved in comic book conventions or pop culture conventions. And so I'm glad to see that, you know, it seems to be working quite well for you, especially, and I agree that, you know, when you're face to face, you have a better shot at getting your message across and getting somebody interested in your project.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, you see someone dressed as a hobbit walking by and you're like, hey, I've got a book you might like, you know, and you can't do that online. I know some people are very successful online. I haven't personally figured out that code. But in person has been so much better in terms of, like I said, getting the book into someone's hands, be like, hey, just thumb through this. If you like these kind of books, you might like this. And it's been great in that aspect.
Well, in fact, I'll even share that one of the coolest things I thought at your booth at GalaxyCon was the fact that you had a map of Endlin. And I don't know why, but like, to me, when you have something a little more extra, so to speak, to your presentation, and I consider that map to be that, like, it just, I don't know, I find that interesting. I find that as something that's really cool.
Yeah, that's the other part, is you can display more art. Again, like an ad, you can like, oh, here's a picture of the book and here's a cool background. But people, like I said, 2 to 3 seconds and they're scrolling. They're on to the next thing. When you have something like the map, or I have those banners with pictures of the characters, and I have kind of these printed stones, which are in shifting stones, which are inherent to the book. You know, they kind of use them to teleport around. So when someone walks by and they see that and they go, oh, that's a cool looking map. Oh, what are these little stones for? Oh, who's that guy? You know, like, it's so much easier to engage with people and explain what the story is about and really show them why this would be an interesting read for them.
So do you have more tales to tell? I presume that you do, because we talked that book one and book two are kind of halfway to the end of the story, so to speak. So I assume you got at least one more in you, if not more, right?
Yeah, yeah. The original plan was a trilogy, but if I keep it a trilogy, book three is going to be a whopper. So it'll probably be four books. It might slip into five. I have those kind of key milestones mapped out. I want to split them into chunks and see what makes sense for a book split. So four, maybe five. We'll see how it works out. So this last year has been a lot of, I had my fourth child last January, so she just turned one. So last year was a big adjustment in terms of writing. Like I said, I used to write in the mornings or write at night. That goes out the window with the baby, because babies don't care about schedules. So last year was a lot of just kind of creative, short little, again, like I'd have an idea, I'd write it down on my phone. I don't have time to write that right now, but that's an idea. So over the last year, I've been collecting all these thoughts that I've had with not a whole lot of free time to write. This year is going to be diving in, writing book three, really mapping out the closure of the series. I also have a couple other kind of side projects that popped into my brain. So I wrote a kid's book that I'm working on getting illustrated now. Just a story that may or may not be based on real events with my own kids and their, my oldest constantly has to come downstairs and check on mom and dad. I don't know why, but he'll come down and be like, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" And we're like, "Hey buddy, it's 9:30. You're supposed to be in bed." "Okay, I was just making sure you're still down here." "Yeah, we're good." So I wrote this kid's book, kind of his perspective on what goofy things he might imagine that we're doing. So it's like, you know, we're fighting monsters, or we're eating all the desserts. There's a mountain of cake that we're sitting on eating desserts. And so I got a bunch of little side projects I'm working on in addition to the Grim King saga. But the plan is to have book three done later this year, out and released and to the readers.
All right. Well, before we get to my last question for you, let's talk about, do you have any upcoming appearances? How about website information, social media accounts, stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So my next event, I will be at the Fan Expo in Cleveland. That's March, I believe it's 13, 14, 15. I'll be there. I'll have both my books. I also have two anthologies that I'm part of that I have copies of. So I'll be selling those. I'm on, my website is mcphersonwrites.com. I'm on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok at mcphersonwrites. And you can find my books on Amazon right now. I'm working on a store through my website, but right now everything is on Amazon.
Okay. Cool. All right. Last question. And I think you kind of talked a little bit about this when we were talking about the editors, but besides getting an editor, what's another key piece of advice you would give somebody that comes to you and says, "I want to be a writer"?
I would say you have to really enjoy writing. And I say that because you'll get to a point where you're either stuck, or, you know, your imagination turns off, and you have to find a way to work through that. And usually that's by writing, just kind of forcing it out. I've found that, at least I see on social media, some people are like, "Oh, like if you don't feel like writing, just don't write for a while." And I've done that, but eventually you're going to have to pick up the pen and start writing again. Mm-hmm. So if you're not, if you're not in love with the writing that you're doing, it might be hard for you to finish that book. You might, and I know a lot of people who write a while and then they they hit a roadblock and it's like, I tried. Like, so there's something, there's gotta be something driving you that you, it's a really important story you want to tell, or you're trying to write it for, you know, you're writing it for your kids or for, you know, your grandparents or whoever, but there has to be something in you that's really driving you to finish that book. So figure out what that motivation is. Cause you know, whoever you are, there's something in there. If you have a story in your brain, there's something in there that you want to say. So figure out what that kind of core element is, if you're telling it to somebody or trying to share something important to you. And when you hit that roadblock, hold on to that idea or that concept, and that'll help you kind of force through the roadblock, the writer's block, and keep going.
Sound advice. Nick, thanks so much for sitting down and chatting with me this evening.
Yeah, thank you, John. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. And folks, you know, definitely check out Nick's stuff online through his social media and through his website. And with that, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Nick, talking about the Grim King saga, his project that he is working really hard on. Definitely check out Nick's work through his social media and his website. His website's very easy to remember, McPherson Writes. It's McPherson Writes, WRITES.com. And that way you can keep tabs on when his project reaches their different milestones and when it's released to the general public as well. All right, speaking of the general public, they are probably wanting to know how they can get in touch with me so that they can vent their frustration or give their praise for a wonderful episode. Anyways, there's a couple different ways that you can reach me. First of all, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads feeds. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you want to be old-fashioned, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Maybe you'd like to tell some folks where they can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get all of the new episodes. It's also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your search bar in your app, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while we're talking about those outlets and apps, hey, don't forget to rate and review. It helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing means that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. But there is one other avenue for checking out the show. That is, of course, every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a live broadcast through the Facebook page. And so there you go. Three easy ways to hear the show. PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.